And welcome again to Brewcrew Online. I am Benjamin Orr.
I'm Colin Bennett.
And as always, we bring you brewers news, brewers opinions, brewers whatever. And lately, as it's been the story all season, it's just been struggles, struggles, and more struggles. The Brewers are currently on a 4-game losing streak. Lost 2 to the White Sox and currently 2 to Cincinnati, almost being no hit last night. And that game was just... I can't say it's a bad effort out of Estrada, but yet again, it's just the bullpen being inconsistent.
No, it was a fantastic outing by Estrada, I think. A couple hits, a couple earned runs, but I mean, it was 12 strikeouts.
That's impressive.
Only half a dozen hits, I think, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
It was a great outing by Estrada. And I don't know who came in the seventh.
Dillard,
yeah. But he, you know, he held down the fort, and then it was one big juicy fastball to a fastball hitter that did it.
Yeah, I mean, you're facing, you know, going into the meat of the order with Drew Stubbs who hit that. You know, after having Votto, then Phillips, and then Bruce. I mean, those are power hitter guys, and I mean, I guess it's bad luck on one pitch, but the thing is it's not helping Axford. He's 1-5 on the year. It's not helping the Brewers. They're now 33-41, and it's just that gap is expanding.
Right. Oh, no, absolutely. I'm going to be perfectly honest with you, though. I care very, very little about a pitcher's record. I like to see, you know, what I liked from last night is Axford gave up just a crushing home run, you know, to tie the game. To eventually lose the game. But, I mean, he bore down after that. He struck out the next two hitters and then, you know, induced a ground ball out. Even in a loss, I think if you're trying to be rational and understanding about this season, what you have to look for is the way the team responds to these bad breaks. And I think when you see a guy like Axford respond the way he did to giving up that home run, you have to at least be a little bit encouraged, right?
I can't really say that because time for encouragement has to be here or has already been passed because we're at the point in the season where if we keep losing these one-run games and saying, well, it was a better effort than giving up 3 runs from our bullpen, we're still losing. That's the problem is we're still losing. I mean, I understand this loss wasn't as bad as Axford's previous blow-ups, but the fact that he still gave up a home run, I understand, you know, it's just that pitch, that one fastball that can alter a game. But, I mean... Yeah, at least Dillard didn't give anything up, so it wasn't a complete failure, and it was a shot later in the game, but it's still just discouraging to see, well, the Brewers, you know, were down 3-0, came back and tied it, but still lost. It's just discouraging.
Oh, right. No, I'm not saying everything's, you know, hunky-dory in Milwaukee. If you're looking for anything to take away from it, you have to... As a fan, I think you have to try to focus on the right things if you're interested in following the team anymore from here on out.
Yeah, I mean that's probably fair.
If you're at the point where there are 8 games under 500 right now, 8.5 back from the division, if you're willing to give up on the season as a fan, then you, by all means, are allowed to do it. You know what I mean? You absolutely can say, this is it, they're not going to accomplish anything. And then at that point... You know, there's no reason to even have these kinds of discussions. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But if you're still willing to be in on the Brewers, if you're still willing to buy into the Brewers, which I think from a professional standpoint we have to be, then you have to be looking for signs of improvement. You have to be looking for something that's worth your time.
Yeah,
I think, and things like that are worth it to me, anyways.
Yeah, I mean, it's been hard all season for them because it's just been one player trying to pick after another, and they just both fall. So it's the pitching has been heavily relied on Zach Greinke. The offense has been heavily relied with Ryan Braun and lately Ramos Ramirez. But last night, they only had three hits, one from Nori Aoki, one from Taylor Green, and one from Corey Hart. I mean, three hits. That hurts. You know, I try to stay positive with the Brewers, you know, because I still look back to last season with the Cardinals. 10 out and come back and eventually win the World Series. I mean, stuff like that does happen.
Right. But, oh, and they were 10 out of the division in, you know, the beginning of August.
Yeah, so, I mean, they were out when you know, it all looked impossible. But the Brewers are out, and they're still shooting themselves in the foot in some cases. You know, I just, when you have guys who are batting below at least 260 and are everyday guys, you got problems. I mean, we have three guys who are batting over 260 and are everyday guys. We have Aoki, Braun, and Ramirez. Everybody else is nowhere near that.
Right. And then, I mean, and who knows how Lucroy will perform when he gets back, but I think that's... I almost worry about Lucroy getting back come the next 2 weeks or so, because the way he was hitting before, there were already a lot of whispers about when's Lucroy going to drop off like he did last year. You know, when is this going to happen? You know, when is he going to start striking out more, blah, blah, blah. He already had that going for him, and it was only June, which I think shows you a little bit of the nature of being a Milwaukee fan. Yeah. We have a hard time believing in success in this fan base, I think.
You know, and I think if things like that happen with Lucroy, just let it go. Don't question it. Because if you question it, he'll start thinking about it. It'll become a mental thing with him. And he won't be able to perform like he did. So he's going to be thinking, well, if I don't get this hit, then I'm going to be right. If I don't, you know, score this guy at, you know, who's on second, it's just going to, you know, not bode well. And it's hard, because you have pressure from not only the fan base, but pressure from your coaches and your manager and everybody else that's above you. So it's really hard to try to perform under that kind of pressure. And it doesn't matter what city you're in at that point. The fact that you're professional makes it that much harder. And coming back from a hand injury like Lucroy's and being a catcher, he's under a microscope. So
absolutely. Absolutely.
It's harder. And I would like to add real quick, just a little short thing. Right now, the Milwaukee Brewers are playing the Reds, and we just went up 2-0. Ricky Weeks hit a home run, scoring Corey Hart off of Homer Bailey, who we had a lot of success against last time. So,
yeah, we've had a lot of success in the past with against Homer Bailey.
So I just wanted to throw that in a quick update.
Oh yeah, absolutely. We'll keep them updated throughout the podcast for sure.
Yep. Sounds good. All right, but you know, talking about pitching efforts, Estrada didn't do bad. Fires has been really impressing me. It's just, he was a guy that I don't think was quite ready yet, but was thrown into the role, kind of like Maldonado, and has kind of done well with it. I mean, it's going to be hard to justify ever sending him down.
I don't think you're going to see him sent down. I think Fires is here to stay. And it brings up something interesting. MLB Trade Rumors, which is a wonderful website, by the way, for the listeners. If you're ever interested, if you like following hot stove trade deadline kind of stuff, MLB Trade Rumors is the place to go. But they've been talking a lot, quoting Doug Melvin, Ken Rosenthal from Fox Sports, and Tom Hodgecourt from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, about the fact that things are looking rather hectic in Milwaukee's front office right now. And the fact that they're getting a lot of calls about who they say is a lot of people, who I think is Zach Greinke, plus some offhanded remarks about Markham and Wolf, about being sellers now. And it's looking increasingly like that's the case. I think it's a terrible move, from a PR standpoint. I wrote an article about it, that I put up this morning. It is, I didn't really mention this aspect of it. We're closing in on 1.5 million fans, and we're going to surpass 3 million fans for the season again. What does that say to all the people that bought tickets in advance and now can't see, you know, Cranky, Wolf, and Markham pitch, or any of these other people that we're going to sell off because we just kind of threw this season to the wind? But outside of that, even if we get rid of, you know, Cranky and Markham, say, then we move up, you know, Gallardo's in the number one spot, Wolf would be in the two spot, and then we have Estrada and Fires as staples into the rotation. And I don't think that's such a bad thing to have those two, you know, lower or higher in the rotation. Like, Fires is a three, Estrada is a four, or, you know, however that ends up.
And then you have the possibility of bringing up Thorny as a five.
Yeah, absolutely. And Livan Hernandez also wants to start again. I don't know if we're quite ready to give him that much confidence. Yeah. I know he came in and pitched a couple good two-thirds innings, but...
Let's just go with what we have for right now. And speaking off of that, I don't really think we need to start him unless, like, we lost half of the rotation. But
right.
I certainly don't think we'll lose Wolf. I mean, he's been a Brewer for a while now. I just don't think Wolf is going to be sold. I mean, who's going to want to take him, first of all? I mean, he's kind of up there in age. He's 35. I mean, people don't look for veteran pitchers anymore, veteran arms. It's just it's a really dry market for those kind of guys. Greinke, obviously the biggest name, but like I said, I'll say it before, I'll say it again. I don't see him leaving the Brewers unless it's after this season. I just don't see it happening in July. Not at all. And Sean Markham is average. He's good. He's average to good. Because he does have a lot of fly ball outs, but those can translate into gappers or home runs.
Right.
It doesn't always happen because he has control of it, but he always is in that mid 3.3, 3.5 ERA range. And he does well, but he's average. And I mean, we trade him. We're not going to get what we think for him. We trade Greinke, we're going to get a lot for him. But I just don't see Greinke leaving before then. Not at all.
Well, here's the thing. Markham won 15 games last year. Not flashy 15 games, but he won them. He also has kind of reinvented himself over the last month. Where all of a sudden he's this strikeout specialist and, you know, he's a guy who can just grind out games and really just confuse opposing hitters. I don't know how it's happened. It's been a slow process, but he's really become, you know, he's become a pitcher that I'd love to keep, to be perfectly honest with you. But any guy that I love to keep has to have value on the market. Is he going to give us as much value as Greinke would? Obviously not. But with Greinke, you know, the people that are looking at him right now, the Rangers, seem desperately interested.
Oh my God, do they need any more pitching, really?
I don't think they need any more pitching, but, you know, if you recall, your New York Yankees of, you know, 10 or so years ago, you can't have enough pitching, right?
Yeah, that's true, but, I mean, like, they just spent, you know, over $100 million signing Darvish, because you have the $60 million they give him, and then the $51 million it was, or so, just to talk to him. You know, they just got Oswalt. You know, Holland's going to come back from the DL. They have a lot of pitching there. It's just, I understand you can never have enough pitching, but why take our guy when, you know, you have three or four guys that can be the equivalent to him already? I mean,
because the Rangers are tired of losing the World Series.
Well, that's their own problem, not ours, you know.
No, I'm not arguing with you here. I don't want any of these guys to go. I think selling our team for prospects, which is essentially what we'd be doing, is a terrible idea. I don't think our farm system is as depleted as everyone says it is. We're a couple years behind where we were when we picked up Markham and Granke and CC Sabathia going back to 2008. It set us back a couple years, but it's not like there's nobody down there.
Yeah, we have a ton of guys down there that, you know, you just don't know of. I mean, we have, you know, guys like Willie Peralta and Thornburg, I mean, who even came up. I mean, we have these guys that, like we said, are behind. They aren't going to come up immediately, but they're there. So it's not like they just have a bunch of cardboard cutouts and 50-year-old men playing golf or something down in the minors. I mean, we have actual players. So,
right, it's not a fantasy camp. It's a real-life organization that's still one of the best in the majors.
Yeah, so that's the thing. And to add to Granke, what I was saying earlier, there's this news that says there's speculation that the Brewers may trade Granke if they are unable to sign him to a long-term deal before the July 31st non-waiver deadline. But like I said, it's speculation. Nobody really knows. But I don't know why you would sign people to multi-year extensions during the season. That just doesn't make sense to me. You see it happen before, and I don't get it. I think it's a better off-season move than anything to do that.
It probably is a better off-season move to do that, but we did sign Lucroy to an extension during the beginning of the season. Last year, when was it? Was it July that we ended up signing Braun's extension? It was sometime during the middle of the year. Mm. You know, but that was more of a case of, okay, we can't give you Prince, Brewers fans, here's Braun. Right on silver platter for you. That's essentially what it turned out to be. You know, and during the beginning of the season, we signed both Renicki and Melvin to extensions. The real problem is money. There's not enough to go around, you know? This is what you have to deal with when you decide to follow a small market team. We don't have enough to go around. Would we love to be able to sign Granke and Markham to an extension? Absolutely. Would we love to sign Wolf to an extension? Probably not, but we'd like to see him stick around because he's getting more expensive than we can really comprehend for the type of pitcher that he is. And we can't get anything for him if he signs with another team at the end of the year. So, in my mind, Wolf might actually be the perfect trade candidate.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense because we'll already get, you know, one or two prospects for him who could turn into something, but I really don't see it happening, honestly, because, I mean, it's just an old arm who sometimes needs his run support to help him. As of late, that's been the case so far, but, I mean, he does well, he does decent enough. He's had a few blowouts recently against Toronto and the White Sox, so maybe it's just AL pitching that he's not very comfortable against, but, you know, it's interesting to see, you know, when the rumors start flying and it starts getting closer to that deadline, what actually happens. And, I don't see us losing Granke like that. And I think the bigger thing in the offseason is trying to re-sign him, which is why you won't see the Brewers sign anybody else. They're going to try to keep what they can to re-sign Granke. And if they can't, then they'll go after those guys that they can sign. It's just, they have a plan, you know, let's get Granke and then maybe we can get Markham back. If we can't get either one, then we're just going to have to start anew with our pitching, so.
Right, right. And, you know, next year you have the possibility of a midseason call-up for Thornburg, or for, not Thornburg, Youngman or Bradley. Willie Peralta might be ready. He came up for a couple bullpen stints, and he wasn't ready. He just wasn't. He was supposed to be the guy that was going to be the big name in terms of the Brewers farm system this year, and he just wasn't ready for it. So, I mean, who knows what's going to happen? A lot of the trade deadline talk, you know, people put out press releases here and there. They know who to talk to. They talk to Ken Rosenthal. They talk to, you know, these MLB scouts and stuff who leak it forward. And a lot of it is just to drum up interest. The same way, like, in the NFL, when you hear something bad about an NFL draft prospect, it's because there's one team that wants him and wants to throw other teams off the scent. A lot of trade talk is the same way, kind of, but on the other side of the coin, if you know what I mean. It's, you know, they want to see what kind of interest they can drum up, so they'll throw a rumor out here and there and see who carries it, just to see how people, you know, to test the waters about that market. So it's hard to say what is actually going on in the front offices of Major League Baseball right now.
Yeah, and with the smaller teams, it's a lot harder to guess. So it leaves a lot to be desired in some cases. But moving on from that, you know, I think there's... It's harder and harder to say this, but I'm trying to say that the season really isn't shot, you know, being in the Central. Pittsburgh's falling back. St. Louis is getting up there. But... You know, we aren't playing any easier games. We host the Diamondbacks, and then the Marlins, and then we head into the All-Star game. So, you know, if the Brewers want to step it up and at least make a stab for that extra wild card spot this year for the playoffs, it's going to have to be a whole combined effort that's going to have to start now. We can't have these one-run losses. We can't have the guy coming in like Parra or Dillard coming in and just blowing up and just can't pitch. We can't have that anymore. You know, I know it's what we're stuck with probably for the rest of the season. There's nothing else that can change that. But, you know, Renick needs to sit these guys down and talk with them. I mean, that's literally what's going to have to happen. He's going to have to make an adjustment somewhere. And if it's with the pitching, I think the offense will respond to it maturely.
In my mind, Renicki's got to start being a little bit more of an a-hole.
Exactly.
He's got to shake stuff up, you know? I mean, Corey Hart and Ricky Weeks are starting to do better. They're still striking out with more regularity than I'd ever care to see. Ricky Weeks still is just barely knocking on the door of 200, and we're in July. How is he still in the lineup? You know, guys like that, and I don't care whether the guy who comes up to replace him or the guy they shift over to replace him is, you know, a superstar, let him play. Weeks isn't getting it done. He's not as good a defender as everyone thinks he is. He's not doing as well on offense as he's ever done before, and he's not even injured this year, so he has no excuses. He's just not playing well. Stuff like that has to change. You know, the bullpen, to some degree, you have to let the bullpen grind it out, but light a fire under them, you know? You have to send out a message that I'm not going to be willing to take this. And Renicki, for all of his good points, the way he worked with Aoki, just letting him work out this little miniature slump he had and letting him know that you've got to show us what you can do before you get in the lineup, it worked wonders with him. I just don't understand how he's approaching this kind of situation. You can tell in his post-game conferences that he's getting really upset with the way this season is going, and rightly so. But, I mean, ultimately, that's his job. You know, he's got to turn this team around, and I don't know how he does that.
You know, I think he can only do so much, but part of that is, you know, him showing the Brewers some tough love. You know, and getting in their faces about things, because you're not gonna get to guys if you're just that soft-spoken, well, we're gonna work on this, we're gonna do this, we're just gonna... No, you have to get in their faces. You have to tell them, you're doing this wrong, let's improve it. You know,
right.
there's a difference between, you know, being the manager who... I'm trying to think here. Being like a Joe Torre, and then being like... And Eric Wedge, I guess. Mm-hmm. I just thought of two managers off the top of my head, because Joe Torre, when he was with New York and then with the Dodgers, you know, he expected things from his team, and his players knew that. They knew, and I'm not just saying because it's the Yankees or because it's the Dodgers, but they knew they had to perform, you know, to that kind of degree of play that Joe Torre wanted, because he would get to them. Eric Wedge, when he was with Cleveland and then Seattle, never really brought those teams around too much. Cleveland, a little bit. Seattle has just always been a really bad story, regardless of who's managing them.
Right.
But there's a difference between drive and ambition, I believe. You know, you can be as, you know, forceful as you can be, but if there's nothing backing that up, then what's the point of even doing it, you know? If,
right.
If you can say, well, you need to do better, but if you don't actually mean it with conviction, there's a whole different meaning to that, you know? It's just, you're talking out of your butt, as they say. So,
I mean, and to go off that point, too, I mean, you look at the teams that, like, when you think about, you know, those big-time managers that got results. You think of, we'll even throw Tony La Russa in there, whom I hate with all of my heart, but we'll throw him in there because he's one of the winningest managers of all time. I mean, that's just what happens. You look at him with the Cardinals. You look at Tommy Lasorda. You look at Joe Torre. You look at, you know, the teams that they coached. Also, there was, you know, the Yankee way. There's the Dodger way. You know, there's, you know, those kind of whole team atmospheres that's built on this tradition of success. And let's be honest, Milwaukee does not have that tradition of success. There's no benchmark, really, other than the teams from, like, 81 to 87.
Yeah.
You know?
And those years are long and gone.
Yeah, and there was a different attitude then with Harvey Kuhn and those kind of managers that, you know, let the team be the team for a little bit, but also had a pretty tight leash. So it's difficult to really say, you know, maybe one of the problems is there's an attitude in Milwaukee where it's like, you know, every day that we still get to play baseball, everything becomes kind of extra credit. You know what I mean? It's always kind of been that way. Where we're a major league team because we're a major league team, you know? Mm-hmm. And maybe it's time for that kind of attitude to shift and say, if we're going to be perennial contenders, which I believe the Brewers can be, the team, you know, at its core is still a talented team. Maybe there needs to be a shift in attitude to say, okay, it's great to have fun and we can still do like the fun theme road trips and you guys can stay loose, but there's a time to be serious and that time is right now.
Yeah. And, you know, I look at what Joe Maddon does with the Rays and how he does those things. He keeps it fun. He keeps it loose, but they still win. They still compete. They still get the playoffs, you know, in the past few years. And it's just, that's an atmosphere that Renicky needs to adopt into this clubhouse. I mean,
yes.
That's clearly something that needs to be done. Because, you know, if it doesn't happen this year, it needs to happen next year. You know, there's going to be a point, if it doesn't turn around, that we're going to have to start looking at next year and start looking at the improvements we can do for next year. And not just be, oh, well, we can turn around and we're 15 games out. You know, there's a point where we're just going to have to accept reality if it doesn't get any better. You know, we're going to have to look at, this guy can't do it. You know, we're going to have to get rid of him or, you know, work with him more or bring up some guy and work with him or look at potential free agents if we can afford those, if they're in our budget, you know. There's just a lot that the Brewers can improve on. And a lot of it, I think, is offensively. It's just, you can't have two or three guys be your offense. It's a combined effort.
Right. And, well, I'll pose this question to you then. Do you think Renicky is the guy to make that shift on this team? Do you think he's the manager this team needs?
Yeah, I really do. Because you look at last year, Brewers went 96-66 his first year. You know, Yost and Walker did a good job setting up what Renicky would go into, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Renicky can get it done. I don't have any problems with Renicky. I think my one problem with him, though, is I think he takes pitchers out too early. It's like when they get to that 100 pitch point, he's like, okay, we're going to take him out. Like, I mean, if we had Matt Cain when he was playing his perfect game, he would have taken Matt Cain out in the seventh. Regardless of what Cain was doing, I mean, he could have struck out every batter so far in a perfect game and he would have taken him out because Renicky gets to this wall like, oh my God, he has 100 pitches. I can't pitch him anymore.
Right.
They can pitch to 120, 130. I mean, they used to do that all the time back in the day. I mean, pitchers can still do that. I mean, and on 5 days rest, come on. So
yeah.
I think he, it's not that I don't think he trusts the starters. I just think if they start to get into, a rocky situation, he kind of hits the panic button. That's the thing I don't really like about Renicky. But other than that, I think he can get the job done. You know, I have confidence in him. You know, it's just, we got to cut him slack because it is, you know, his second year managing with the Brewers. So it's not one of these things where, oh, the Brewers don't finish, you know, third or better, we have to fire them. Because so much crap is thrown back to the managers. But, again, they can only do so much.
Right. And I think Renicky has the toughest gig in baseball right now. Well, considering the depth of injuries to high-level talent that he's had over this year so far. I mean, it's difficult to really to say that he's not getting the job done as much as it is. He's getting dealt a crap hand right now, and he's got to try to pull something out of it. I do want to do a quick game update because I think this is hilarious. we're in the bottom of the third right now. Homer Bailey just struck out. But Corey Hart or Aramis Ramirez singled on a ground ball to left field, which scored Aoki, so the Brewers are up 3-0 now. Right after that, Corey Hart is batting. Aramis Ramirez, for some reason, tried to steal second base, and he got caught dead to rights for the third out.
Wow.
If that doesn't just sum up the way things are going right now. I know we have the lead. We're up 3-0 right now. And Zach Greinke's doing fantastic. But what? Where does Rama? Who gave him the green light?
I don't get that at all.
Aramis Ramirez has had a pinch runner like almost every single time.
It's like watching a tank run out there. I mean, really, it's just, it's not pretty to see him run.
You might have a better chance of me stealing second.
Yeah. Hell, you might have a better chance of Prince Fielder stealing second sometimes. He's a big guy, but he can run.
Momentum. It's all about momentum.
Randy, I just, wow. That's interesting, but, yeah, good to see we're up right now. Greinke's doing well. Struck out one so far, only allowed 2 hits through two. And, you know, this, if we win this game, will be good because we haven't lost more than 4 in a row this season. And if we're losing, it'd be 5 in a row. So let's try to avoid that.
Right, absolutely. I know we have to eventually get to, you know, player and pitcher of the week, but mm-hmm. I did want to get your opinion on one thing, and that is the Aroldis Chapman double somersault.
Oh, God. I don't get it at all. It's just bizarre and weird, and it makes him look like a moron.
Aroldis Chapman is a grade-A weirdo. Really is. I don't know if you heard about the incident he had about a month ago now where someone robbed his hotel room and they found a woman tied up in his hotel room.
Yeah, it was like his girlfriend or something, I think.
Yeah, it was really weird. I couldn't follow the particulars of the story just because of the sheer weirdness of it, because she was somehow involved in the robbery too. I'm speaking out of generality, so don't really quote me on that. But take a look at the story itself. It appeared in Deadspin and USA Today, and all sorts of places. So find that out on your own accord, because I don't really want to go into it. But I mean, the guy's he's just certifiable to some degree, and I mean, you had a save against the Brewers in late June. I mean, you did strike out the side, but a double somersault? What is that? How is that, like, how is that an appropriate celebration?
Like I said, I understand what, you know, Valverde does with Detroit, you know, how he beats his chest, or how, you know, pitchers like, look up to the sky and point or whatever, but, like, that's just weird. Like, there's no other word to describe it, but weird. I mean,
yeah,
it's just, is it something you don't expect? Quite honestly.
Yeah, and I'm willing to take, you know, like, K-Rod has a tendency to just shout for an extended period of time after he finishes, you know, a save. Axford always plays it cool, you know, but Brian Wilson does his little thing for his dad or whatever, you know, where he points up to the sky, and a lot of people do something like that. And I'm willing to accept those because it's a pressure-filled situation, and you know, it's a lot of tension just gone, and you know, you saved the game. You're the guy who finished off the win. So I'm willing to accept that. But the double somersault is, like, it's just so odd and such, like, a weirdly aggrandized, like, a-hole move. I don't understand where it comes from. Or is that his new thing now? Is he going to do some kind of elementary school tumbling routine every time he saves?
Hilarious, actually, to see that. I mean, you know, I bet that'd be pretty funny.
Right. One day he does, like, some weird I-can't-do-a-cartwheel.
I'm waiting for him to do, like the Ozzie Smith backflip or something.
Right, no kidding. But that's the type of stuff, like, it reminds me of do you remember Gramatica for the Arizona Cardinals when he tore his ACL celebrating a field goal?
It looks just like
something like that is going to happen to Chapman. Like, he would be the guy that would roll his ankle and be out for 2 weeks because he wanted to do, like, a round off to celebrate a save.
Yeah, or like when who was it? Kenji Morales for the Angels, when he hit that game-winning home run against Grand Slam, whatever it was, a few years ago, and then comes back home, jumps on the plate, and breaks his ankles out for 2 years. I mean, what? How does that happen?
Right. But, no, and I have a lot of respect for the way Chapman pitches. I know he's quite an oddball, but I mean, you got to think about the way that kind of communicates things to people too. Like, I have no problem with, you know, the big walk-off celebrations, like Prince Fielder untucking the shirt, the people dropping. I can see why that's perceived as, like, you know, unsportsmanlike or ungentlemanly or whatever. And you know, there's some room for that kind of stuff. But I guess when you're on the other side of it, yeah, it always looks dumb. Like, a guy does a double somersault because he strikes out Martin Maldonado. Like,
oh, boy, there's
right.
There's
like,
I see
you strike, you know, you strike out Ryan Braun with the bases loaded, and you know, you're down by, you know, and you're up by three or whatever. Like, yeah, I mean, that's cause for some big time celebration. But I mean, Aramis Ramirez was on base for a walk, and then you strike out a rookie. And you do a double somersault. Like, just a little perspective here and there is appropriate, I think.
It was just odd, to say the least. I mean, I don't think I've ever seen really anything like that. So it's just, it's not to be expected. So, I mean, there are better ways to celebrate, you know, saving the game or getting out of the game. There are better ways to celebrate than doing double somersaults. maybe he'll do one backwards next time or something, like, we look at each direction every time he gets a save or something.
Right.
All right. Well, let's get into our last segment today, and that is Players of the Week. And I think now it's fair to say, since it's, you know, June 27th, that our next podcast will be in July, our Players of the Month. So you want to start us off, Colin?
Yeah, I think for our Player of the Week, hitting-wise, I think I have to go with Aramis Ramirez.
That's mine too.
I mean, he's on a tear, really. He's hitting over 300 in his last couple games. He just came off a 13-game hitting streak. Just a boatload of RBIs. He's really been doing a fantastic job lately.
Yeah, I mean, that's my player offensively of the week, and it's just, you know, the production out of him is just phenomenal, aside from stealing bases.
Right.
It's been a lot of good production that we saw last year and years before when he was with the Cubs. And it's just what we've needed, you know, to back up Ryan Braun early. Because, I mean, you have Aramis Ramirez, who I believe bats after Braun.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it just complements what Braun can do if he gets a double or if he gets a home run. You have, you know, say Braun hits a solo home run and then Aramis Ramirez gets a double. That really rattles up a pitcher, knowing you just give up two big extra base hits. So, you know, I think that's crucial, what he's been able to do. You know, he does have, 9 RBIs in his last 10. So it's just been tremendous to see what he's been able to do at the plate.
Yeah, absolutely.
Pitching-wise, my pitcher of the week, got to give it to Mike Fiers. I mean...
Yeah, absolutely.
His last two efforts, his last two pitching efforts, he's gone 14 in a third innings. He's given up one earned run on 9 hits while striking out 12. That is crazy.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I would definitely 100% give it to Mike Fiers. The man's really coming into his own. He's doing great. 1.67 average against him, and a whip of .72 in his last couple outings. You know what's really shocking, though, in looking at this in preparation, is actually Axford's last couple outings, save for that home run, have been brilliant outings.
Yeah.
He's got the same average as Fiers going against him. You know, and he's got a whip of only one coming into, you know, in his last couple outings. He's really been getting better except for those big meat pitches, and I want him to stop that so I can start saying that he's my pitcher of the week again, because it's always yeah, but with Axford.
Yep, you know, it's just June has not been a very good month for him at all. He's given up 4 home runs in June, or he's given up a total of 5 home runs all of last year.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been very tough on Axford. You know, it's just a lot of them are stupid pitches that he throws. And I'm not saying that he's stupid. I'm just saying, you know, it's just that fastball down the middle that mm-hmm. you hope they don't swing at, and they always do. And, like, even if it isn't that, these guys are swinging at anything and just hitting those balls that they just go in no man's land. So it's hard for Axford. So.
It really is, yeah. But right now, you know, I think just, again, until further notice, Greinke and Fiers are pitchers of the week until someone else can do something different.
Yeah, but specifically, I think more or less it's been Fiers as of lately, but details.
Yeah, right.
Player of the month, who is your player of the month, Colin?
My player of the month is... it's tough. My player of the month is probably... probably between Ramirez and Braun. Both have had outstanding months so far. I think, funny enough, I mean, cases can be made for a lot of people if you want to go, like, who's a player to watch for next month. I would say someone like Nigel Morgan has come on of late. Mm-hmm. Really been a lot more dependable, especially on defense, and getting the turn more on offense as well. But... really, I mean, you got to hand it to the month that Braun and Ramirez have had, I think.
That's very fair to say, you know, because it's just been, you know, it's starting to make the Brewers' meat of the order dangerous again.
Yeah.
Especially with Ramirez starting to turn around. And hopefully Corey Hart can get on that same path as well, because he's been, you know, turning it up, going back down, turning it up. It's just, it's been kind of inconsistent with him.
Right.
My player of the month, I have to give it to Zach Greinke. He, you know... inside of June, he's 2-0 with a 1.54 ERA, .87 WHIP. He struck out 30 batters in 31 innings and only given up 22 hits while walking 5. I mean, you really cannot ask for a better performance out of your starter than that.
Right.
It's incredible knowing we have one guy who we aren't afraid to pitch. Yeah, he had that bad out against Minnesota. We gave up 4 runs in 8 innings, actually. But, I mean, he's had a few bad blow-ups this year, but nothing too significant to hurt his overall 2.74 ERA. I mean, it's been crazy for Greinke.
Yeah. I'd say, yeah, Greinke is definitely, like, just running away with everything. But you look at also, you know, our other guys at the top of the rotation in Gallardo and Markham. Gallardo had a real tough luck loss the other day. But he's pitching really well. He's striking out almost as many as Greinke is lately. And Markham, again, the way he's reinvented himself over this last month has been really fun to watch.
Yeah, and hopefully that spreads throughout the team because, you know, we have seen a lot of tough luck losses come from our guys. So
mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's just tough luck losses for pitchers or just tough luck losses in general for the entire team. Because, I mean, we've had a lot of one-run losses. A lot of extra inning games, so it's been hard there.
Yeah, I think you look at this team, you look at this team by the numbers, and you can see where the deficiencies are. Ricky Weeks, 28 strikeouts over the last 30 days. Corey Hart, 35 strikeouts over the last 30 days. You know, you look at some of those things and you can see those really deficient spots in like Cody Ransom and Weeks and Hart and, you know, the fact that Taylor Green is so inconsistent when we throw him in there and, you know, but you also look at Ramirez and Braun and Aoki and, you know, the tag team that Maldonado and Kataris are doing and the way that they're, admirable efforts considering, you know, the position they're in. And you look at the starting pitching and how it is just off the charts good for the last month or so. Even going back to like late April, the starting pitching has not been terrible.
No.
And there have been a lot of bright spots for, you know, people like, Cameron Lowe this year is shouldering a big load in the bullpen. And, Axford and Frankie have had some really brilliant performances mixed with some really bad ones. It's just like, you can see something wants to happen, but they're just not letting it happen yet.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of potential with the Brewers that can explode, and we saw that evident of last year. You know, and a lot of people do get on Cameron Lowe about when he gives up a run, but really, I mean, aside from the runs he does give up every once in a while, he has been, I would say, our most consistent bullpen guy, which he wasn't even expected to be this year. That was supposed to be Estrada. But,
right.
For what Cameron Lowe has done, I think it's, you know, fair to say he is our most consistent bullpen guy, and I don't really have any qualms when they bring him in. Now, if it's Dylan or Parra, I'm just like, I want to hide under my bed, because it's just that bad. But,
right.
There is something there, it's just, they're shooting themselves in the foot too much to unlock that, whatever it is. So, I haven't given the ship on the Brewers, I won't. But if it gets to a point where, like we said, it's just we're so far out and nothing's going to happen, then let's look at next year. But I still don't think we can give it up, especially not in the NL Central works.
Absolutely. I do want to say before we get going here, I know we're running a little long, but FanSidedRadio.com is up and running. You can find our podcast. We'll start to be featured on there. You can find podcasts from any one of the other MLB FanSided sites, as well as the John Ackerman Show is every week. And if you are a fan of what we do here at FanSided, it is a great place to check out. Definitely take a look, follow them on Twitter, all that stuff, because you'll get a ton of great sports content from a fan's perspective, so definitely go check that out. Plus, they helped give us a home on a podcast, so let's return the favor.
And one more thing I want to add, go to www.missionsmallbusiness.com, vote for FanSided. We are a small business that we could get up to a $250,000 grant, so please help us out here.
Yes, we need to eat.
Yeah. you don't want dead hosts. You know?
Right.
So please vote for us there. Please check out other podcasts. It's just, we love the support you guys give us. You know, thank you for listening as always. And it's just, it's awesome to do this. I have to say that.
Absolutely.
All right. Next week, we will still do a show, even though it's a holiday. We may even have another guest for you guys. So check that out and stay tuned as always. Thanks for listening.
Thanks, guys.